como hay luda a la mala UDI.
Welcome back to Voices from the Front Lines. This is Damon Azali Rojas, and on the phone we have Ray Boudreau. Ray, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So it's actually good to have you. I mean, we've been following your case since January, and we've had three or four different shows around you guys, and it's good that you're out.
It certainly is.
I'll start with that.
It's good to be out.
So for folks who've missed those shows, Ray is one of the SF8, and they are a group of folks who basically were fighting have a lifelong fight for the Black community in terms of expanding rights and whatnot. They were either members or supporters of the Black Panthers. And in 1971, they were brought up on trumped up charges for killing a police officer. Part of that happened with basically they extracted they extracted the testimony in terms of saying through torture, and then basically it was thrown out. And then the beginning of this year, they were all brought back in again. And so over the last week, I think all six of the eight have been released. Is that correct?
That's correct. Six out of eight. Two of the guys are still doing time in New York.
Right. The Herman Bell and Jaleel Muta King, right?
Right. That's right. Them.
So I know a lot of it was this whole thing around they were trying to get you guys for $3 million, $5 million bail.
Well,
what happened over the last week? How did that get reduced?
Our original bail for a couple of us was $5 million. The first judge that we went in front of decided to make the bail even with everybody, so everyone had a $3 million bail. And over the last 8 months, with our legal team and the kinds of motions that we presented and the kinds of affidavits that were presented on our behalf, and the fact that everyone had been on the streets for 35 years working and living in the same place, the judge saw it our way and reduced the bail to where it was manageable. And it took us 2 weeks, but all six of us have bailed out at this point. The last person, Francisco Torres, got out yesterday.
Well, that's interesting because
Friday, I'm sorry.
In terms of the bail, like even now, I mean, maybe it's just because of, you know, my organizer's salary here, but in terms of the bails, they range from $200,000 to almost $700,000.
Right.
What's the difference in terms of the different bails for different people?
I think the judge had in mind different areas of culpability, the way we were charged. And he did a different bail for each person, depending on what the culpability of the charges were, as he saw it.
Okay.
And they did. They ranged from $200,000 to $600,000. But overall, you could say that our bail was reduced from $18 million to a little over $2 million.
Much more doable.
Oh, yeah. And we came up with double that amount in real estate. People cobbled together their homes. People we didn't know and still haven't met, some of them at this point, and they did that for us.
Well, I know we were at an event, I think it was in April, at the Southern California Library, and
right.
Yusef Omowale, who is the director there, basically said that you were the one who put in the lights and the electricity inside the library.
Yeah, I went to a meeting there once, and it was pretty dim, so I volunteered my services, and they... And got him a deal on some lighting from some people that we did business with. And myself and a couple of friends installed them over time.
That's
matter
great.
Of fact, I still got some work to do there. I'm glad I'm on my way home.
All right. I'll call Yusef and let him know.
Yeah, please.
So I know actually that day your wife Phyllis and your sister Janice were there speaking.
Right.
Just give us a little. I know a lot of it is around, you know, being a political prisoner. How is it in jail? Just tell us how it has been to be separated from them and to know that they're also fighting for you.
It's a very moving thing, not so much the jail, because every one of us had done time, you know, for our convictions, but the fact that my family and my friends came out so hard behind this and, you know, made sacrifices and traveled and you know, tried to visit. And that was true across the board for all of the guys and for all of us being around our children, grandchildren, and family for all this time. I mean, of course we missed them. But, you know, there was a time back in the day when you were kind of on your own and support was just voices. Right. We were much younger and we didn't have families like we had today. So that's the biggest difference in my mind and with some of the other guys that I've talked to. Even my granddaughter came to testify on my behalf my bail hearing, and it was very moving. And obviously the judge was impressed because he did give me a bail that I could manage.
How old is your granddaughter?
She's 19. She's a student at ASU.
Okay. So I know your bail got reduced. Did the charges also change, or is it the same charges?
No, same with the charges. Up to this point, since January, all we've really dealt with is bail and discovery, which we haven't gotten yet. Our next court appearance, we made a court appearance today, but it turned out to be a blank, and we set a new date. The next one is October 10th, and we're going for a collateral estoppel, I think it's called, where some of the evidence should be thrown out. And from there, we'll move on to actually dismissing the case for lack of evidence.
How much time have you actually already spent in jail for this already?
Did about 8 months.
8 months, and then you also were back in the 70s. You were also in
jail. Well, there was something you said earlier I'd like to correct.
Okay.
The crime that we're charged with occurred in September of 71. In September of 73, some of the guys were picked up in New Orleans, and three of them were tortured. And that's where statements about the crime in 71 came to light. In 75, the three guys who were picked up in New Orleans were indicted in San Francisco.
Okay.
The judge threw the case out because the statements had been coerced and obtained through torture. And that's where the case since 1975. And nothing happened again until this year, or 2 years ago, when the grand jury investigation started.
And from what I understand, there were two detectives, Ed Erdelatz.
Erdelatz, that's right.
And Frank McCoy.
Right.
Who, I mean, it seems, listening to what they have done in terms of stalking, it reminds me so much of what Judge Sable did with Mumia Abdul-Jamal and coming out of retirement to put him back on death row. What, you know, how have these two detectives driven this case against you? And if you were inside their heads, what do you think? What is going on? Why are they so keen on the eight of you?
Because it was a case. The ex-police chief of San Francisco, his name is Earl Saunders, has just come out with a new book. Earl Saunders, I'll put it in this perspective. Earl Saunders and Mr. Erdelatz came onto the force about the same time, and they were both golden boys. They were both being groomed to go up the ladder. But the difference was Mr. Saunders came from a poor background, and Erdelatz's father had been a coach for the Raiders, some of the old-time Raiders. So Erdelatz, they began to move up, and something happened to Erdelatz along the way, and Saunders went on to become the chief, and Erdelatz went on to become a detective. But I think in Erdelatz's case, his motivation is this is a case that's unsolved. A policeman was murdered. He was always involved in anti-Panther Party activities. You know, he was on the special squad, that kind of thing. And to him, I think it's one that's got away. And I think generally that Mr. Erdelatz is just a racist kind of guy, and this is one that he wants very badly before he retires. As a matter of fact, he had been retired, and I think he came back to work.
So that comparison was very true, that it touched Judge Sabo. Right.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, you know, sometimes the guy's just got an axe to grind.
Right.
But 2 years ago, the grand jury investigation started, and of course, we refused to testify, and some of us did 3 or 4 months in jail then until the grand jury expired. And they took him about a year or a little over a year, and finally an indictment came down. Mm-hmm. And the indictments included Jaleel and Herman, who were in prison in New York, Francisco Torres, who had been working in the community in New York, Harold Taylor, who had been working in Florida, Hank Jones and myself in the L.A. area, and Richard Brown and Richard O'Neill in the San Francisco area. Richard O'Neill, by the way, is only charged in the conspiracy and not the murder. And there was one other brother. We would have been the San Francisco Nine, but he died of cancer in December of last year, and that was John Bowman.
Okay. So, I mean, I think this is a real interesting time in terms of where black people are at. And I think the three things that I think most recently I've been trying to think about is, one, in terms of the right of return of black people to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Two, you know, last week in terms of Gina, the massive support, you know, for these young black men who were accused of this crime, and then the SF8. Could you take a minute and kind of put your case in kind of this broader context of where the black liberation movement is right now and where we need to go?
I agree with you on those three points. I was doing, I was in jail here in San Francisco when Katrina happened for the grand jury resisting thing, the judge jailed us. But I was in jail when Katrina happened, and I only knew about it because I was talking to my wife on the phone every day. There was television or newspapers where I was. And when she began to tell me about it each day, I began to think of it as a kind of a watershed event in class distinction and race distinction, and that maybe from that there would be some kind of an awakening and a new movement. And there are still bits and pieces of that, but all of that takes time. And then when we were arrested in January and the kind of support that we have, not only from the black community, but across a wide spectrum of people of all ages and even into Europe. I got letters while I was in jail from people in Switzerland and Denmark, that I think that this is a very important time in the peace movement and in the anti-war movement and generally in the human rights movement. The Jena 6 has brought that to fore, where people have actually gone on their first demonstration, you know, young people, students who have no idea. And I don't know, I'll be 65 in November, and so many things that happen historically or in the world today, I analyze, and some of those things I just take for granted. But in being in jail and having to express myself to people and exchange ideas with people, I realize how little people know about recent history of the United States, and sometimes how little they care, or they have a mistaken idea about what's going on. And I think that not through the media, but through public radio, through small local newspapers, and through the kind of things we're doing now, information is getting out to people, and there's a general eye-opening thing that's going on. As Spike Lee says, wake up. And it sounds like that time, you know?
Right.
And we've been discussing these things because we've all been together here the last 3 or 4 days. And the very question you asked me, we've been talking about over the last few days.
And so in terms of the most recent, you know, re-attacker against, you know, you and the other brothers who are in the SF8, I kind of already know the answer to this, but how does this actually affect your resolve in terms of the work that you do, et cetera?
I'm sorry, say that,
how does it affect your resolve? Does it make you just kind of want to keep going, or does it make it say, like, you know what, because of this larger context, I actually want to do more?
Oh, of course. That's what each one of us agreed to, that we were going to do more. There's a guy on the radio here that does a radio program on KPU. I'm sure you're familiar with that in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be able to listen to him sometimes in jail, and he had an expression where he says, you're still a freedom fighter, even while you're laying on the couch. I know you just forgot about it, but you're still a freedom fighter. And when it's brought to you, you don't have a lot of choice.
Right.
And we could step back into our lives and go back to what we were doing, but in fact, everyone was doing something more or less to the degree that they did when we were super militants. People were working in the community, working with young people, and sometimes just one-on-one. I'm an electrician, but still, I work with people every day and try to inform people and, you know, be what you would consider a revolutionary, to try to have an open mind. And, you know, that always put me in good stead in everything that I've done. And each one of us has kind of recommitted themselves to the struggle. And through our recommitment, there are other people recommitting themselves. I had someone tell me yesterday that she had always been interested, and Richard Brown, who is a well-known community person here in San Francisco, it was like people that he had raised as children. And she said, when I saw Richard Brown on TV in handcuffs, it made me want to do more.
Right.
Because I knew him personally, and it brought out, you know, the will to resist in me. And she was doing spoken word poetry. That's why I got a chance to talk to her. So all in all, I think it's been a very heartwarming experience for everyone, and everyone has committed themselves, recommitted themselves to try to do more.
So this is Voices from the Front Lines, and I'm talking to Ray Boudreaux, who is one of the SF8 coming back to L.A. Why don't I let you go after you tell me what kind of support do you guys still need?
Well, at this point, we still need support for travel expenses and that type of thing. The bail is taken care of, but the people who live on the East Coast and the people who live in L.A. are going to have to travel back and forth for court appearances, and there are printing costs and that kind of thing. So our website is freethesf8.org, and any information that you would want about the case is posted there immediately. And the addresses where you can make a donation are also posted there at freethesf8.org.
And then I know there's also videos there. I saw a video of Hank today. Also, if you have just want to do an email, it's freethesf8, and 8 being the actual number, 8, at riseup.net.
Right,
so
right.
If folks want to get more information, check it out. So, Ray, again, I'm very happy. I'm sure a lot of people listening are very happy that you are outside of the cage right now.
It's been a great experience. No one ever gets bail on the murder of a policeman, not when they're charged with that. No one, none of our legal team, none of us can remember anything like that. No one else has been able to come up with anything like that. And I think the reason is there simply isn't that much of a case.
Right.
And I'm confident that in due time, in the next few months, you know, that'll be revealed and we'll all be on the streets and we'll have a lot more to say and do at that time.
Okay, Ray Boudreaux, SF8, thank you so much for joining us.
And
we'll,
thank you.
We'll keep on following what's going on.
And I'll be coming home tomorrow night.
All right. Sounds
okay.
Good. Okay, thanks a lot. And
thank you.
We'll be right back after this break with Malcolm Suber, who is going to be running for New Orleans City Council under a Reconstruction Party platform. We'll be right back.
A long, long time ago, I was told the story. Flowing like liquid through cracked concrete. Fly paper to the wall from the force of the splash. Felt the crash.
Oh no, did it all fall down?
To the ground, heard the sound. Felt the gush of the wind spinning round and around. And I person staying focused, balled up and tossed the mat.
Still on track, imagine that.